This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Monday, May 5th. I'm John Wanamaker. Target says CEO Greg Steinhoffel is leaving the company. Tim Nelson has more.
The company's board of directors issued a statement this morning saying that Target has decided, quote, "Now is the time for new leadership at Target." The statement said that Steinhoffel is stepping down immediately as CEO and also leaving the company's board. His departure comes after a massive data breach that affected tens of millions of Target customers starting during the pre-holiday shopping rush last year. Steinhoffel has been with Target for 35 years. He was named CEO in May of 2008. John Mulligan, Target's chief financial officer, has been appointed interim CEO. Roxanne Austin will be the interim chair of the company's board. Target said it has retained a consulting company to search for a new CEO and that Steinhoffel will serve as an advisor during the transition. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Senate Democrats have unveiled a $1 billion proposal for public construction projects. The Senate Capital Investment Committee was meeting this morning to discuss the bonding measure. DFL leaders are proposing to fund the list of projects with $846 million in general obligation bonds and $200 million in cash from the budget surplus. DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach said he wishes it was a bigger bill.
This is a very, very good time to do infrastructure projects because interest rates are very, very low. The construction industry is still a bit sluggish, so I think the state would get very competitive prices right now on infrastructure bonds. And when we go to do some of these projects 2 years from now, they're simply going to cost more.
Democrats need some Republican votes to reach the 3/5 majority required to pass a bonding bill. GOP leaders say they won't support a bill that exceeds $846 million in bonding. Bach said reaching a bipartisan agreement on the bill is key to concluding the 2014 session. In the coming days, people in Minnesota and Washington, D.C. will plan how to honor and remember former 8th District Congressman Jim Oberstar. Over the weekend, the surprise news of Oberstar's death led people on the Iron Range to recall their congressman of 36 years, not just as a renowned politician and expert on transportation and aviation issues, but as a friend who never forgot where he came from. Dan Crocker reports.
Ask an Iron Range Democrat about Jim Oberstar, and you're likely not going to hear about some political accomplishment. Instead, you'll probably hear a story like this from Iron Range blogger Aaron Brown, who won a trip to Washington, D.C. when he was 7 years old.
And I had a 20-minute meeting with Jim Oberstar, and it was 2 hours long. And he took me in all the places where regular people aren't supposed to go. And I was just some kid from a trailer house on the Iron Range.
Because at one time, Oberstar himself was just some kid from a tiny house on the Iron Range. His dad was an underground iron ore miner during an era of often brutal working conditions. But from those humblest of beginnings, he became Minnesota's longest-serving congressman, conversant in six languages, renowned for his intellect and rambling oratory.
That was, I think, the story that I take away is how you can come from a shack on the Iron Range and become a Francophone congressman, the leading expert on transportation infrastructure in the country.
Oberstar studied in Europe, taught in Haiti, and worked in Washington for a decade for his predecessor in the House, John Blotnick, before running for Congress. But he never forgot his roots, says former state representative Tom Rukavina, who now works for current 8th District DFL Congressman Rick Nolan.
He remembered the range history, and it was a tough history. You know, history of fighting the mining industry and being a one-industry area. You know, his father being one of the first to organize the steelworkers. And never forgetting that the union movement grew the middle class of America.
Indeed, Oberstar's father carried the Steelworkers Union card number one, says longtime friend Shelley Matago.
Jim was very, very proud of that. Card number one was his dad, Louis Oberstar.
Oberstar rose to become chairman of the House Transportation Committee. It's hard not to drive or bike around northern Minnesota without a tire touching a project he helped fund. In 2011, a Lake Superior freighter was renamed in Oberstar's honor. But Matego says more significant was the name he replaced on the ship, Charles M. Beegley.
The name that was on there before was the president of a steel company. So now you have, years later, you have this kid who grew up in poverty on the Iron Range, the son of an iron ore miner, boots the name of the steel company executive off the boat.
DFLers attending the 8th District Convention this weekend said it was serendipitous Oberstar passed away the same day they gathered in Nashwauk, just down the road from his hometown of Chisholm.
I've never seen this motley group of people quiet for so long in my life than the moment of silence they gave our congressman.
Delegate Joel Heller of Duluth first volunteered for Oberstar when he was just 16. He remembers the congressman launching into a speech when the teenager showed off a new car.
And what kind of car did you buy? Was it an American-made car, and was the iron from the Iron Range? We would go outside, and he would kick the damn tire. Sorry for swearing. He would check to make sure that the car was Iron Range-made, made in the USA, and then it would be all right.
After serving 18 terms, Oberstar suffered a shocking defeat to Chip Cravath in 2010. But Shelley Matego says he never really stopped representing the Iron Range.
Right up until last week, he was still calling around. The community is asking, well, are you getting what you need? Can I help you with this? How are your bike trails coming along? He never left office. Maybe formally he did, but in his mind, he was still there.
Matego says that's how he was. It was never about Jim Oberstar, she says. It was about giving back to the community he came from. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Nashwauk.
And Oberstar's funeral service is set for Thursday in Potomac, Maryland. As students return to classes at Waseca Junior and Senior High School today, investigators are looking into how a student assembled an arsenal while planning an attack on the school. Court documents released Friday say bomb squad members were shocked by the amount of bomb-making chemicals and components amassed by 17-year-old John Ledoux. Police say they also recovered several guns from Ledoux's bedroom. The teen has been charged with attempted murder after police say he told them he was planning to kill family members and then as many fellow students as he could. Prosecutors have asked that Ledoux be charged as an adult. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. This week, University of Minnesota Regents will hold a public forum on the U's proposed budget. Alex Friedrich has details.
Friday afternoon, the board will listen to comments on the university's $3.6 billion budget for next year. Finance Chief Richard Fitzenreiter says that thanks to appropriations from the state legislature, the U can extend the tuition freeze for Minnesota undergraduates for another year.
For 2 years, the state's been able to reinvest in education, and that's a great thing for students.
Room and board would rise 1.2% or less, depending on the campus. The U would also cut $20 million in administrative costs. Fitzenreiter says that would put the U ahead of schedule in meeting President Eric Kaler's goal of cutting $90 million by fiscal year 2019. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
An Iron Range company that recycles abandoned mine waste into new iron ore product is expanding. Magnetation broke ground on its fourth iron ore concentrate plant outside Grand Rapids this winter. It's planning a formal celebration later this month. President Matt Lehtinen says the company has devised an innovative way to extract low-grade iron ore from waste rock piles and tailing basins left behind by the past century of mining.
This is a waste material, so we're taking waste and extracting remaining value out of it. And we're doing it in a way here where we're not disturbing any new pristine forest, and we're employing a lot of people with great paying jobs.
Lehtinen says the company will employ over 400 people in Minnesota when the new plant opens in January. Magnetation is also opening an iron ore pellet plant in Indiana. Amtrak begins service this week at Union Depot in downtown St. Paul. City officials had hoped passenger rail service would return there after Union Depot's $243 million restoration was finished in 2012. However, safety upgrades to tracks in the area took longer than expected. Deborah Carter McCoy with the Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority says she expects many train buffs to be on the platform to welcome the first Empire Builder from Chicago at 10:03 Wednesday night.
We are expecting quite a number of enthusiasts because they have fond memories of Union Depot, either as children or with their parents as travelers, and so it's going to be an exciting evening for sure.
The last time Union Depot was used for passenger rail service was back in 1971. It's already being used for local and intercity bus service. Green Line light rail trains will begin using the station next month. An English teacher from a high school in Minneapolis is Minnesota's Teacher of the Year for 2014. Matt Sepik reports.
Thomas Rademacher is an English teacher at the Fair School downtown, part of the West Metro Education Program. He's 32 years old and has taught for 8 years. Rademacher says he was inspired to teach largely by his family history.
My great-grandmother and my great-grandfather got married in secret so that my great-grandmother could continue teaching, because you weren't allowed to teach as a married woman. At that time, you had to be a single woman in order to teach.
Rademacher says he enjoys using literature to spark discussions in class about contemporary social issues and to inspire his students to find their place in the world. Rademacher is the first teacher of the year from the West Metro Education Program, a voluntary integration district set up 2 decades ago. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Boaters are being told to slow down on the St. Croix River and some metro area lakes because of high water levels. Martin Moylan has the story.
The State Department of Natural Resources says water levels are abnormally high on the St. Croix, as well as Keller and Spoon Lakes in Ramsey County and Crystal Lake in Dakota County. Boaters on the water bodies must travel at slow, no-wake speeds to reduce shoreline erosion and property damage. Kara Owens is a DNR spokeswoman.
The St. Croix River right now is at a no-wake zone from Taylor's Falls to Prescott, so that means boaters and fishermen heading out on the river need to be traveling at a slow no-wake speed the entire way from Prescott to Taylor's Falls.
The DNR also warns that rivers and lakes are dangerously cold, making it especially important to wear life jackets. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And finally, after a harsh winter, bears are coming out of hibernation in northern Minnesota, and they're on the hunt for food, which is scarce. The State Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents to inspect their properties for birdseed, pet food, barbecue grills, garbage cans, and remove or secure items that could attract hungry bears. With berries and vegetation scarce after the hard winter, bears can be tempted to dine on things people got in the habit of leaving in their backyards during the winter. Blaine Klemick is the DNR's Assistant Northwest Regional Wildlife Manager.
The bears, when they emerge from their dens, they are hungry. They do need to replenish those fat reserves quickly. In a spring like we're having right now, when there's not a whole lot out there for them to eat, black bears are looking for any kind of food sources.
The DNR says people should not approach bears. The department's website has more information about coexisting with bears. And that's the NPR News Update for Monday, May 5th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.